Mr. O'Sullivan, Reel 1. Whereabouts were you born, please?
In 34 Box Street, at Tower Bridge.
And that was in 1920?
1920.
What did
one of six.
What did your father do for
you? He worked on the railway.
And did you go to school at Tower
Bridge? Yes, went to school in Tooley Street.
How old were you when you left?
14.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I got a job as a printer.
So how did you come to join the army?
I got called up conscription in the first 200.
When was that?
The 23rd of the 5th, 1940.
What did you feel like when you got your call-up papers?
Down in the dumps. Because it was something that nobody really knew anything about, only the Territorial Army or the boys that was in the drill hall at Jamaica Road that we'd ever seen as we was children, like, but we didn't, I had no knowledge of the army or whatsoever. It wasn't until I got to Dover Castle, when I got called up to Dover Castle, that I really first come into contact with soldiers.
What, did you do your basic training at Dover?
In Dover Castle.
What was the basic training like?
34, after about a fortnight, I should say that you were powered up with some of the finest people in England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales. Because there was people joined up with me on the same day from all over England. And they were some of the greatest people that you could ever wish to meet all my own age. Now we joined a regiment called the 34th Signal Regiment, Royal Artillery. And we had to do all our telephone work and all our wireless work and all that was all done inside the castle. And we were down there for a period of time of where the girls in the keep of the castle, the girls slept in the centre with us in the keep, and we was above them in the keep. And then we did all the signalling, and then we went out from there with different things. And during the time we were down there, so the Germans come over and bombed Dover Harbour. And that was where we first put out the shells that had the little mines on them, that when the German aircraft threw through, it was like a curtain of mines on parachutes, small ones. We could see them cling to the aircraft, go out in the middle of the channel, and just blow themselves up.
Was Dover badly damaged by
the
bombing?
Yes,
whilst you were there?
Yes. No, not badly damaged by the bombing. It was damaged more or less with the barrage balloons that were up and the long trailing cables of the barrage balloons. We came down all over the place. That was the biggest. You couldn't move because everywhere you went, they went over the electric railways, over the pylons. You were frightened to move because of the electricity in the cables.
Were there many casualties?
I don't really know, because we were in the army. We weren't allowed out at that period of time because of the danger. We didn't find out whether there were many casualties.
Did you feel nervous at
yes,
that time?
Yes,
in
yes,
Dover?
Because it's the first time I've been shot at from aircraft. See? Something you didn't expect, these rocket shells.
Did any of the shells hit the barracks?
No, not hit the barracks. They all went because of the barrage balloons. They couldn't get down low enough to fire at the castle because the balloons were up all over the place. So they just come in and dropped them mostly in the harbour, shot at the boats and things in the harbour.
What was civilian morale like in the bombing?
Can't really say anything because we never went out, you see. We was always in the castle.
How were you treated during the basic training?
Very well, very, very well. Beautiful. It was really great. Whether it was because of the people we were with, but Dover, the Royal Artillery then, the food was very good. The accommodation inside the castle was very good. And the schemes that we went out on, they were very good. But of course it was like something different and something new, because I'd never been a soldier before.
How long did your basic training last for? A few weeks?
Pardon? Longer than that. Longer than that. I was in Dover Castle for a long time. And then we moved from there, as I say, after our training was all finished there. I can't really remember when we moved from there, but we went to a place called Glyndebourne, do you know it?
In Sussex?
Yeah, that's where the Opera House is. It is owned by a Christie family then. Well, that was where we picked up the two big guns on the railway. That was Her Majesty's gun, Gravedigger. And Her Majesty's gun was painted white. It was White Elephant. Two great big guns on the railway. The train was... The train composed of the two guns, sleeping quarters, food quarters, and we had our own railway engine, our own guard wagon, and we also travelled backwards and forwards on the railway, which was marshalled by Royal Engineers. The driver of the train was a civilian driver, but he was called up in the Royal Engineers. And so were the guards. One of mine was a friend who done the marshalling of the train, was a fellow by the name of Freddie Fuller. And he lived at Woolworth.
And the guns were called White Elephant?
And Gravedigger.
And they were railway guns?
Railway guns, big railway guns.
Were you part of the team which
ran
them?
Yes.
Which one did you man?
Well, it was on whatever one we got out from under the camouflage first you just joined. There was no specific gun because they were both the same. So it didn't make a difference what one you were on.
And they were at Glyndebourne?
In the railway at Glyndebourne.
How far from the village?
In the village. Do you know Glyndebourne?
I've never been there.
You've never been there?
Was it right in the village itself?
Right in the village itself. Yeah, just on the railway side. And we used to parade on the station forecourt for our morning's work on the station of Glyndebourne station, railway station. We used to just walk over the railway bridge because the billet then was by the side of the railway. Our huts and billet were by the side of the railway.
Was it during the summer or during the winter that you were manning these guns?
All during a period of time.
How many months do you think you were manning?
Oh, I've got no idea how many months were.
Many months?
Yeah, good deal, because we took them all the way up to Larkfield. We took them up to Larkfield, we marshalled them all up and took them all through and travelling by night right up to Larkfield.
Where's Larkfield?
Up in Catterick that way.
Catterick, in Yorkshire?
In Yorkshire, Catterick Camp, Yorkshire, where all the big Royal Artillery guns were. But they were only schemes. We never fired them. Then we went up there, I suppose, for quickness of movement to where we could get them. And then fetch them all the way back again to Aylsham.
How long did it take to move them? To Yorkshire?
Something about a fortnight. A long time. Could have been travelling by night most of the time. Then from Aylsham I went to... after they finished that, then I went to from Aylsham to Tonbridge.
And were you still with the same unit?
No, we went into another regiment.
What was the name of the unit you started off on?
34th Signal Training Regiment.
And do you know the name of the unit that you went to afterwards?
At Glyndebourne, I think it was the 89th Heavy. I can't be sure about that.
How did you enjoy this work on these big guns?
Beautiful, because it was the people you was with. I would never have come out of the service. I'd have stayed and done 22 years if it hadn't been for going slightly deaf.
From the sound of the guns?
Well, from the sound of everything.
What kind of work did you personally do on these, on the White Elephant and the Gravedigger?
Loading up shells, big wind up at the side, big handles at the side, wind up the handles. Iron up the shells, lowering the shells down, raising the bogies off the rails, so we put down pillars to hold it still. Because all the bogies had to be raised off the lines. You couldn't fire them with the bogies on the lines. So we had to raise the wheels up and then lower the wheels down when we were moving again. Everything was all practice and practice and practice and practice perfect.
Did the German Air Force find them and attack them?
No, because they were all covered in camouflage. See, one we used to put in a tilt cliff. It was a wonder to me they never found them, because for the simple reason that we had to cover all the railway lines with sacking, because of the shine off the wheels would have been of a night time for the railway. It's a wonder to me they never found them, because there must have been a break in the rails along by Glyndebourne.
So these guns were to be used in the defence of Britain if the
Probably. See, one of the things when you're in the army of any description of doing things like this, you are never told what's in front of you. You're only taught what you're doing on that particular day.
Did you find that frustrating, not to have the information?
No, because at the end of your thing, there was either football of an evening or into the local bar for a drink, so that the next thing you were like ready for the next day's work. But it, you know, you all different things took your mind off of what you were thinking about, but you were never told anything.
Did you think that the Germans would invade?
I did when I was in Dover Castle. Because between Dover Castle, Folkestone, and a place called Swingate, there were very, very few troops. The most troops that I ever came across were in Dover Castle and Shorncliffe Barracks, Folkestone.
But you didn't later on? You didn't think the Germans would invade when you were at Glyndebourne?
No. I thought we'd got out that period then. Yeah.
What did you think would happen if the Germans did get across?
Well, I think that they would have got a good foothold.
When you were in Dover, who did you think was going to win the war?
Well, I mean, week by week we were accommodated for more and more people. So therefore, after a period of time there, and I left Dover, I mean, we were getting stronger and stronger all the time. And then as you moved around, then on one of them we had a scheme in Glyndebourne where we turned ourselves into infantry to be against the Australians or the Americans, I think, on a big scheme all over Sussex. And then when I went to Tonbridge and I joined the 13th Medium Regiment, that was 5-5 howitzers. They've got some of these down at Taramanchia's in the glass cases. Then I was in the 13th Medium. And then when you took the guns to Fall Park, which is just outside Glyndebourne, we used to go back through Lewis near Brighton and out that way. And then when we took them down to Shenneybridge in Wales, where we were down there for about 3 weeks, and we fired them from one hill to another hill, we knew then that it was the talk, more or less, of the battery that they had no chance, because we were so perfected in the range of the guns, the moving of the guns, the working with the 25-pounders, that it was a thing that gave us plenty of heart to go on and do what we were doing at that time, you know. And then, of course, from there, Tonbridge, we travelled all over the place. Then we went to Sussex after a period of years of, like, doing the training. We went into a forest somewhere in Sussex, and there were two concrete barges. Now, these concrete barges were in the forest. And what we had to do was, we had to unhook the guns quick, nose the guns into these concrete barges as though we were packing them onto landing craft. Now, we did this for weeks and weeks and days, getting the brain guns onto these concrete barges, also the guns, and packing, and ourselves all on the concrete barges, and then we had to fetch them all off again and just stay in there, because we were like billets out, camping out, doing it.
So you were really practicing for D-Day?
Didn't know that. Didn't know that. The only time that we left there was when everybody was on the move. And we came down from Sussex, I think, right the way down through Elephant and Castle, Rotherhithe Tunnel, under the tunnel, darkness, no lights, into King George V Dock, and started loading the night before D.
Was this still with the 13th Medium?
13th Medium. I went through it all the time with that, then. Yeah.
What rank did you hold by then?
Lance Bombardier, in there. Yeah. And then from there we loaded on the boat. And as we were loading all the stuff on the boat in the King George V Dock, so the doodlebugs come over, cut their engines out, and dropped in the dock right near us. So all those that was on deck run to one side, and the boat nearly tipped over in the dock. And then eventually, you know, they ran back and walked about all over the boat. And then we left there when it was getting dark, and we went down to Southend.
Do you know which division you were part of?
No, I can't tell you that.
Or which brigade?
No, I can't tell you that. This is what, you know, what they do. Now, I was a 13th Medium Regiment. I was on a boat. And we were travelling out to where? On the water. It wasn't until we got to Southend and the boat stopped that the people told us we were at Southend. Now, we didn't know nothing as to where we were going or where we weren't going. During that time, we had these big blocks of concrete come up and join us. There was great big wheels with tubes on them, like as if they were telephone wires or great big wires. Now, we formed one great big massive convoy. And it was during the night that they put up the anchors on the boat. And then we started sailing very, very slowly because of the caustic mines going through the channel. But it wasn't until we got right down the coast that somebody told us we were going to land in Normandy. And that was the first we heard of it.
What did you feel like when you heard that?
Well, we didn't know what to expect. All it knew then was that the parachute just had dropped the night before onto Arromanches, Gold Beach and Juno Beach, and the Americans were down there and everybody was down there. But we didn't know that until we got right down to Normandy nearly. And then when we got down there, of course we had the big storm. So we couldn't land because of couldn't get the barges off. Well, I just got off of the landing craft and we got the guns and the Bren carriers and the FWDs, which is four-wheel drive vehicles, gun towers, just up onto the shore and onto the road of Arromanches when they blew the Mulberry Harbour up. So that it sunk forward in the complete harbour.
What did you actually see?
See the boats going down. All the boats going down and the concrete's being put in position. But that was all we saw. Then from there then we were on the move all the way. When we got to the top, there was a small mound of earth where there was a dead soldier, I suppose it was. And half of us went, and he formed an island in the road, the dead body, covered over. And then we just went either right or left of it and then just made our way into, well, where I don't know, just up through Normandy. We made our way up towards Bayeux. Now, we knew, for some unknown reason, that there was no bombs or shells fell on Bayeux. Because there was a legend or a talk or something to say that England would fall if there was any bombs. I don't know how true that is.
Was that any... the story that was going round?
It's supposed to be true to the present day. That King Harold was there, or King William or whatever it is, and no bombs or no guns were allowed in Bayeux. Then we moved on from there, the other side of Bayeux, and we moved to up from Bayeux. So it's very difficult to tell which way you went with our maps, see?
When you were moving inland,
yeah,
were you under fire at all?
All the time. From dive bombers. The only thing that we did do was that in several parts was we had to stop the anti-aircraft guns, our own anti-aircraft guns from firing, because we had 16 guns. And during that 16 guns, wherever we stopped, we had anti-aircraft guns with us. But the thing was that nobody realised that when an aircraft travels from a height of, say, 20,000 feet and then comes down, it comes down to ground level. But if you can imagine that them anti-aircraft gunners following the aircraft, they're getting lower and lower and lower and lower. So eventually they're firing through our lines because there was nothing to stop them from going down very low to the ground. So we had to have the engineers put wooden blocks under them, a temporary wooden block, so they couldn't come down to kill us. That was the only thing. Then,
which particular point on the Normandy coast did you land at?
Gold
Beach.
Central Beach. Yeah.
And when you landed, were you under fire then?
Yeah, all the time. But we were lucky, really, because whoever picked the place to go there, it's got a cliff on one side and a cliff on another side, and you're in the bay in the middle, which is hard sand. But the Messerschmitts, when they come over, couldn't come down low enough to hit us, the speed they were going, because they were firing their shells out into the sea. Because we were, like, with this cliff up here, when they come over, they couldn't come down to us like that, understand what I mean, because of the cliff the other side. So they had to keep up to a certain height to go over the top of us. But lucky enough, we had a good cover of Messerschmitts,
of
Spitfires. Our own craft come over.
So what kind of craft did you land in at Gold Beach? What kind of ship? What kind of boat?
Landing crafts. We landed off of the big boat. We unloaded off the big boat onto the landing craft. And the landing craft took us all in and we just walked through the water.
How many men could each landing craft hold?
Well, you got what? As A battery, B battery, C battery, D battery, so I suppose it's somewhere about four guns and four FWDs. Fairly big craft.
Which battery were you attached to?
A battery. I was a driver of the TLA, which is a troop leader truck. A battery. Yeah.
Who was in charge of A battery? Do you remember?
Major McClay.
Major?
McClay. Yeah. Scotchman.
And were there any casualties from your landing craft as you landed?
No. We were very lucky we escaped all that.
What could you see of the beaches as you landed?
What, from the large boat or from the beach itself?
From the landing craft.
Well, you could just see the sand in front of you. I mean, you weren't all that very far from the beach, because the Mulberry Harbour must have been somewhere in about, what? I suppose nothing more than about, what, 1,000 yards from the actual beach itself, because it was sunk very close to the beach. Very close. So there were a few bodies floating about like, but nothing of, they were probably like airborne troops that come in the night beforehand, because everything went so quick.
How frightening was it as you landed?
Well, you didn't know what to expect, did you? Because there were snipers and there were the Americans next door to us bombing their own people in the boglands. Because it was all soft stuff there, where their stuff got sunk. Well, into the soft earth, they couldn't move. We were the only ones who could practically get right through because we were on the safer side. But it wasn't until we got further away, then we knew we were in it.
How long were you on the beach? Did you move straight from the beach inland, or did you wait on
straight,
the beach?
No, straight from the beach, because it was all cleared for us to get through. We stayed on the water till they got it clear.
The lemongrass stayed on the
water? On the water till we got clear. Because there was no point in getting it off the beach, because under the beach it was just hopeless. Everything would have been cluttered up there. Because, I mean, it was only a small beach, it wasn't a tremendous beach. And just imagine the amount of boats that had the... I mean, we weren't the only regiments. There were flour barges for making bread. There was food barges. There was all sorts of things all floating about there, what had been towed over there.
Were there any infantry near you landing?
No, they'd gone on further.
They'd gone in front of you?
Yeah. A team of people to our right was... the people who put up the great big petrol. They built a great big petrol container down there for the lorries and for the octane and everything else. And that wasn't very far from the beach, that wasn't. Great big silver, great big tanks they were building.
How long after landing was it before you got your guns, your battery organised and started firing?
I should say somewhere in about 3.5-4 miles from the beach, because they'd pushed them back by then, the infantry and the parachutists. We were only just like mopping up as we went along. The very first big battle that we put down was Falaise, in the Falaise Gap, because there were 25 pounders in front of us.
But you had howitzers, you said.
We had great big 5.5 howitzers. Yeah. I don't think there was much call for the howitzers at the time, because if you go to Normandy, you'll find that all that part of the country is all flat. It was all dairy farming at that time. The only big place we came to, as I say, was Falaise.
Did you see much of the Normandy civilians?
No, we came across a few of the resistance with the red, white and blue armbands. But then again, it was our policy not really to talk, because you didn't see, we were strangers in a strange land. And it was very difficult to try and talk to people who had a foreign language. But we were taught in our different periods of training that don't talk to them, because you don't know who they are, on account of being people in disguise from Germany or German regiments or one thing or another. So it was best, like, for all us in our lot, that to save casualties and save any trouble, we didn't really mix with them kind of people.
Did you obey those orders not to speak?
Oh, yes, it was very dangerous, because you didn't know where they were sending you. I mean, see, as soon as you landed and we started to go up the road, we were given maps. But the trouble is, we couldn't follow the maps. As I told you just now, we couldn't follow the maps because all the signposts were turned round.